Welcome to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims here on WWGH 107.1 FM radio. We stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can download free app called TuneIn on any electronic device and search WWGH. If you would like to call in with any questions or would like to make any comments, please call 740-383-9944. And this is while we are on the air from 4:15 p.m. until the top of the hour at 5 p.m. Let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-382-8552. We have Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there, 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. We have Inspect Ohio, LLC, your one-call home inspection company with 25 years of experience working for you. They are located in LaRue, Ohio. The telephone number there is 740-262-0939, and they have an ongoing announcement. Welcome all, Child Evangelism Fellowship Luncheon and Silent Auction to benefit the Good News Club will take place Saturday, March the 7th, 2020. The place will be Cornerstone Alliance Church, 2010 Marion Marysville Road. Doors open at 10:30. The event will be over at 2 p.m. Donation for lunch is $10. If you need tickets or would like any more information, please call 740-262-0939. We are at the end last week of Black History Month, and I usually read a oratorical from the contest winners. This is from April 2019. Jacob Vinson writes, "I'm going to rise. I'm not thinking about plummeting, following the greats, trying to change my fate like MLK. I love instead of hate." That's a good philosophy to have, is love. And Martin Luther King wrote, April the 16th, 1963, letter from the Birmingham jail. "We will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the hateful words and actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence of the good people." Doesn't seem like we've changed much over the years, because hate is still hate and love is still love, and it's really loud. It speaks very loud in our generation today also. I have a thought for today. The title, gentleness. If trees had souls, the quality most attributable to them would be gentleness. Gentleness is not a lack of strength, but a quality which doesn't disturb, doesn't push, yet knows its power and can provide shelter. Now, at this time, I am so excited. I would like to turn my attention to my guest for today, our Honorable Judge William Finnegan. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
I'm so happy that you were able to be a part of our show today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, like I said, I'm nervous and I'm happy and all that. Okay, you're like a celebrity to me. Really, you really are. You really are. Your name, it speaks volumes in this community, and we're glad to have been a witness of your judgeship in our community.
Oh, you're very kind.
Yes, you have been to. You have been to. Yes, you have. So, talking about the Black History Month, I've seen you even in the marches in the past, right?
Indeed, yes.
Yes.
Yes, very much.
How was that experience for you, Judge?
Well, it's important to recognize the importance of justice for all people.
True.
And to make sure that all people are treated equally and with dignity, and that everyone in society should have the opportunity to do well.
True.
At least the opportunity to do well.
Right, right. Take advantage of those opportunities too, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. It was good seeing you and your participation over the years. I know Earlene Baskin Hatch. Oh, I know absolutely. You remember her,
yes.
Right?
Yes, Sister Earlene.
She did many fine works in our community,
indeed.
Didn't she?
Absolutely.
Yes, a great leader and mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And spiritual leader also.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your hobbies and some of your passions.
Okay. Well, grew up in Marion, moved here when I was 8, and grew up, went to St. Mary's School and Marion Catholic High School, and afterwards, graduated, went to college at the University of Dayton, which is doing very well in college basketball, by the way. We're
oh,
ranked
really?
Number 4 in the country,
okay.
So it's very nice. after that, I majored in political science, then went to Ohio State University College of Law,
okay.
And graduated from there. Got a job offer in with Mike Piacentino's firm here in town. So I came back to Marion and started my private practice in with Mike, and Gene Yazel was also giving me some business as well. And so I developed as a local attorney, doing a little bit of everything, general practice,
okay.
Which is what you do in the smaller towns.
Right.
And eventually I became an assistant city law director, prosecuting criminal cases at municipal court, and then later left that to become an assistant county prosecutor doing civil sides, not prosecuting the felony criminal cases, but giving legal advice to the county commissioners and the county recorder, that sort of thing.
Okay.
There was a vacancy that happened at the Marion Municipal Court in 1989, and I was appointed to the position by the governor, and then I was reelected a couple times there. 2004, decided to run for common pleas judge up at the courthouse, and was elected there in 2004, and then
right.
Was reelected a couple more times. Then beginning of last year, I retired, but
okay.
I still take appointments as a visiting judge, so I get to go around various courts around the state. Like, I'll be in Delaware tomorrow morning.
Oh, really?
Doing a case. So I do that. As far as my interests and hobbies, one of the things I hope we can talk about a little bit is my amateur radio interest,
yes,
or ham radio, as some people call it. I've been doing that a long time, 51 years I've been a ham
Ooh,
operator.
Longer than your jetship, huh?
Oh, much longer. Yeah, I was in ninth grade in school when I got my first radio license.
Really?
And such, yes. And I loved that, enjoyed it very much, and now I'm sort of the teacher for the Marion Amateur Radio Club, group of ordinary people from Marion County who enjoy amateur radio and want to spread the joy. So doing a class beginning actually a week from tonight. So
really? Okay.
If we get a chance, we can talk about that a little bit if you want.
Okay.
And but I enjoy doing that. I also enjoy kayaking and the beautiful rivers that we have around here. People don't pay much attention to them, but they're really very beautiful.
You like doing that?
Oh, very much so. So peaceful and enjoyable, and
the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's real nice, and enjoy that very much. Also enjoy traveling now that I'm retired, doing some of that. But like I say, I'm working about half time.
Okay.
I was working at the courthouse yesterday here. Today I took off. Tomorrow I'm going to be in Delaware. Thursday I'll be back in Marion. So
must be nice, huh?
Yeah, it is nice. I can sort of pick and choose.
That's great. You know, during your retirement, you don't really have to be lazy and do anything. You can just pick and choose, right?
That's right. So I've been married for 35 years and two kids. And
okay.
Nice family. I'm pretty happy.
No grandchildren?
No grandchildren yet. They take a long time. My generation, the generations of my family take a long, long time.
Do they?
Oh, my grand... Yeah, you want to know this? My grandfather used to play cards with Warren Harding.
Really?
Yeah.
The president?
Yeah, my grandfather.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's not too long ago then, grandfather.
No, it's not too far
for
back
you,
as
yeah.
far as generations. But
right.
he... He was only 7 years younger. My grandfather was only 7 years younger than Warren Harding, born in 1872.
What history.
So that's what it is. We take a long time to pass generations here in my family. So.
Okay, I think my children are kind of slow too.
All right.
But I do have grandchildren. I have one great-grandbaby.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Oh,
she's beautiful.
On
yeah.
That.
Yeah, she's 18 months old, so.
Oh my.
Yeah, so they're slow too. I'm like, "Let's get it to going now."
Oh, yeah. I hear that.
So, yeah, I know you talked about wanting to talk a little bit more about your amateur radio. You said you first got your license in the ninth grade, huh?
Yep. I was in ninth grade when I passed my first radio exam. Amateur radio operators are simply ordinary people who have an interest in communications or electronics or both.
Right.
And because you have the ability to do so many things on so many different frequencies and with such high power, you have to pass a radio license test from the Federal Communications Commission, just as this radio station, WWGH. It's a federally licensed radio station.
Okay.
Well, so is my station.
Okay.
You know, your call sign here is WWGH.
Right.
My call sign is NR8I.
Oh.
And when you're an amateur radio operator, you have your own call sign.
That's neat. I never even heard of that until I ran into you at the Board of Elections elections.
That's right. A lot of people haven't, especially younger people haven't. But it's really some neat things you can do. You can communicate. You can communicate across town. You can communicate across the world.
Hmm.
You can communicate through satellites in Earth orbit.
Wow.
And you can even bounce signals off the moon if you want to. So
really?
Yeah, I'm planning to within the next couple of years. I'm getting my equipment together. It's not the easiest thing to do.
It's probably not. That's a long way away, isn't it?
Yeah, 250,000 miles each way. So that's all right. It's so far away you can send a signal and hear it coming back to you.
Really?
Yeah. So
that sounds neat.
Oh, it is. It is neat. And you can do experiments or just talk, and you can meet people from around the world if you want.
Oh, wow.
And you can help out in emergency situations, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that really gets people interested lately. The last 20, 25 years.
Okay.
And we do communications in times when regular communications get knocked out.
Okay.
For instance, just talking myself, the deadliest tornado in Ohio history happened in April of 1974 in the town of Xenia.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
I was a student at the University of Dayton there. I was only 18 miles away.
Okay.
And because I had my amateur radio license, I got in my car and I drove over there. And when they found out I had an amateur radio license, they sent me over to one of their emergency shelters.
Okay.
And this is like 2 or 3 hours after the tornado hit.
Wow.
First day. Somebody else set up an amateur station there, and I manned the emergency communications shelters, communications to the outside world, because there was no electricity there at that point, the first night after the Xenia tornado.
Wow, you were like their hero.
Well,
yeah.
There were a lot of heroes there that were going
on. One of them, then. Okay, well, you were one of.
So I did that. Other people helped out. The Carnington tornado that hit in 1980. The Great Blizzard in 1978. There was no communications, and so they put the amateur radio operators here locally into the National Guard trucks because they were having trouble communicating with other radio services.
I bet.
And so we had amateurs at the sheriff's office and could talk, and we served as a relay.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that we can do to help out locally in times of emergency.
That's great. That's good news. That's good that we have that advantage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just reminiscing over the blizzard of 78 because, every January they put it on Facebook or in the newspapers and on the radio. And it seems like the more I read about it, the more tragic it sounds because you forget how bad an emergency or something that tragic happens, over the years you kind of forget, oh yeah, we had this ton of snow, but
it's hard for people to imagine what that was like.
Yes.
But it honest to goodness was just amazing what a huge storm that was and how much snow was piled up. Where I was, I was in Columbus at law school at the time, but my mom and my grandmother were on Kissinger Road, mm-hmm. and all that wind blew the snow over the bushes at the from the country club, and it piled up behind that, and it piled up to the stop sign. People's feet were at the base of the stop sign.
Wow.
That's how high the drifts are. You don't get those very often and such, but
praise God.
When they do, amateur radio operators are there to help out.
That's great.
And people are interested in getting involved in that or just communicating around the world. I'm starting a class, or the Marion Amateur Radio Club is starting a class. I'm the instructor, mm-hmm. and I've been doing that since 2004, so I know a little bit about how to do it.
Right.
And if you're interested, you don't have to be an electronic genius. You just have to have the interest and the desire. If you do that, we can get you a license here within a couple months.
That's beautiful. Is there a number they can call or someone they can contact?
Yes, you can. And if you're interested, we can give you the number at the end, too, if you're interested.
Okay.
But just give me a call at 740-387-8944. 740-387-8944. And if you can call tonight or whatever, like I say, I'm going to Delaware down to court.
Mm-hmm.
If people call me, they're interested. The only cost that's involved is getting the book, which costs $25. And if you're interested, let me know. I'll run down to Worthington to the amateur radio store that's down there, and I'll buy the books, and I'll deliver them to you over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have that and be ready for our first class, which is a week from tonight.
Wow. Those of you who are interested, being amateur radio, what you call that?
Operators.
Yep. Yes, give Judge Finnegan a call. Wow, that's great. Someone must be out there.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to get into your judgeship, Your Honor.
That's fine.
So, how did you like being a judge?
Oh, I enjoyed it very much.
Did you?
Yes, there. I had 16 years in at the Marion Municipal Court, which was one of the busiest one-judge courts in the entire state of Ohio. We had a very large caseload, anywhere from 17,000 to 22,000 cases a year.
What's
designed for municipal court is fairly large numbers of cases, relatively simple cases, but they're designed to move quickly,
mm-hmm.
and that's what the entire thing is. It's a people-centric court. You see everybody at municipal court. 17,000 cases. I would say easily I would see at least 10,000 people a year come
Ooh.
Up in front of me.
Wow.
It was sort of funny, because. You do that in a community like this.
Right.
10,000 people, people see me and they sort of recognize me as the judge because it's the only judge they see usually and stuff.
Right.
But they're one of at least 10,000 people I see in a year, so I don't know them.
Wow.
You know, so they'll say, hey, how you doing? I'll say, well, I'm doing fine, but I have no idea who they are, a lot of the time because I'm terrible at remembering people.
That's a lot of people to have to remember, though.
Well, yeah, there is, and I may not, and I'm terrible at remembering people anyway, which is sort of embarrassing to say when you have to run for office, but, so what I would do is, sort of say, oh, yeah, how you doing, hopefully I can figure out how I know him. I might
right.
know him from church, I might know him from softball or
right.
basketball or from work,
Right, right.
I couldn't very well say, oh, how do I know you, because I might have put him in jail and stuff, so that would be
yeah,
awkward.
I guess that would be part of it too, right?
But that's okay. That's the beautiful thing about municipal court, is you deal with a lot of people, you help out a lot of people, and I enjoyed that. And then the last 14 years that I was a judge, full-time, I was at the courthouse up at Common Pleas,
mm-hmm.
which is the felony criminal cases, most serious criminal cases, or and the biggest civil cases, like the medical malpractice cases or big auto accident injuries, right, and things like that. A lot fewer cases than at municipal court.
Right.
You know, my case.
It should be. You'd think, yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, my caseload would be 800 cases a year compared, mm-hmm, to 17,000.
Right.
You know, but they're more complex cases, and each case takes a lot longer to do because they are so complex.
Right.
And the thing is, that court handles pretty much everything that all the other courts don't handle, like not probate cases, not juvenile cases, not divorce cases, mm-hmm, but not municipal court cases, just everything else. So the types of cases, you don't get the same thing all the time.
Right.
And so that's sort of interesting. I like doing legal research, finding the right answers. And so that's what's so nice about that type of court.
I was going to ask you about that. How do you go about making your decisions? Say, like, what was one of the, I guess I could say worst, or one of the cases that criminal law, what, mm-hmm, was the one that made the biggest impact on you?
Well, there's
can you think of one, or a lot?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of cases which were tough. Mm-hmm. The Bobby Joe Berry murder in 2000, I did the initial stages in that at municipal court, and the community was very, very on edge from, mm-hmm, that case. And I'd never seen the community like that before, or since, really.
Right.
And that was very high tension. So that was sort of a tough thing to deal with. Some of the criminal cases I've had have been pretty horrendous, and I don't even want to go into it. It was, one case was just so tough, and it was a jury trial that was going on for like 2 or 3 days. I do the case, mm-hmm, you know, and I just go home and I just go straight to bed. You know, I mean,
exhausting, overwhelming.
It was just rough. It was, yeah, just rough. So those things were tough, but some of them were very interesting legal issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not real exciting as far as the public goes, but trying to find the right answer, which is
right. I bet that is hard, isn't it?
Yeah, part of what being a judge is you have to listen to the evidence.
True.
You have to be fair, absolutely, in your mind, but you have to know where to find where the answers are. You know, the key to being a good lawyer, key to being a good judge, is not necessarily having all the knowledge in your head right off the top of your head,
mm-hmm,
but you know where to go to find the right answers.
Right,
and,
right.
And I think I generally was pretty decent at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just put it together, you follow the law, and you try and do justice.
Try to do justice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that could be a good thing, and some people may look at it as not always justice, but as long as you are clear in your mind that you did your best, you know.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, you have people, and you have two sides.
Always.
And, you know, you might have one happy side. You might have one unhappy side. Sometimes you'll have two unhappy sides when they get done with it.
Sometimes.
Yeah, both sides
sometimes
are disappointed. It's like... I remember Peg Whalen, back when I was municipal judge, Peg Whalen was the secretary at the Marion City Law Director's office. I was talking about one case one time, and she finally looks up at me and she says, "Judge, you know what? If you wanted to get a job where everybody loved you, you picked the wrong case. You picked the wrong judge, job. So,
wrong career, right?
Wrong career." You know.
I guess that would be hard. It's like being a parent.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I look at it. It's like being a parent. You have all these children in your home, and everybody has different personalities and, you know, different issues to deal with, you know, and how do you punish them, you know, when they need correction, you know.
Who's telling the truth?
Right, who's telling the truth and who's not, absolutely.
What do you do if they've done something wrong?
Yeah. Right. Right.
So, it's sort of the same thing.
Sort of the same
thing.
Do
it for society.
Right. What is the biggest impact that you wanted to make on our society and our community?
I just wanted to do a good job, mm-hmm. just be the best judge that I could be.
Right.
And the purpose of courts is to resolve disputes. I wanted to resolve them fairly. I wanted to and do it the way it should be done. And that was my purpose.
Right.
Like every job I was in, either legal or before I became a judge or before I went into law, I just wanted to do the best job that I could do. And that's the whole thing that's guided me the entire time. It guides me now.
Okay. So looking back at the beginning of your career, what things have changed? What things have not changed?
Well,
for the better or for the worst?
Back when I began my legal career would have been 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. Just a little over 40 years ago, I passed the bar. There was no internet. Copiers were rare.
Ooh, wow.
Most people, most secretaries and all law offices were still using carbon paper and stuff. So, copiers were real rare. Computers were non-existent.
You don't even think about that anymore. Well, you know,
absolutely.
Carbon paper. Whoa.
Yeah. And the books, the law was in the books. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not online research like it is now.
Right.
And you have that. The criminal law in Ohio was much, much, much simpler mm-hmm. than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just remarkably complex.
Why you think so?
Oh, it's a simple reason.
Mm-hmm.
Legislatures passed the code sort of in one big group, and then every year they add something on, and then they add something else on. And traditionally what happened is every 20 or 25 years,
mm-hmm.
the legislature pulls it together and says, okay, this is getting unwieldy, and we've got to get this straightened out.
Right, right.
Well, that's what they usually did. The last time they really pulled it together and put it together and made it simple was the year 1974. That's almost 50 years ago. So we've had almost 50 years of just adding on more and more laws, or just making differences in the legislature as far as penalties. Well, if they did this, do that. If they did this, they do that.
Right.
Before
right.
it was just, okay, they did this. These are the range of penalties you can choose.
Right.
They keep on fine-tuning things. And the criminal code now is just massive and unwieldy, and it's a mess. But, you know.
And then you have to dwell through all that to determine a case or.
Oh, it's remarkable. I can get, one example I can give you is the operating a vehicle while under the influence
mm-hmm.
law.
Mm-hmm.
In the year 19, I added this up. I was doing research one time. 1967, the entire statute for that drunk driving mm-hmm. statute, including the penalty, was 76 words long. That was the entire it. That was it. Now that law has expanded and been changed so many times that it's it's 13, 14, 15, 16 pages of text.
Oh, no.
Text altogether. And it's very difficult to figure out, you know,
right.
where to get things done.
It's
thousands and thousands now of words compared to what 76 words was before.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Try to figure that out, right?
the operating a vehicle while under the influence statute is a lot more complex than the murder statute.
You wouldn't even think that, would you?
You wouldn't, but it is.
Hmm. That puzzles me a little bit. Does that puzzle you? Why?
It does. It could be greatly, greatly, greatly simplified, but that's up to the legislature.
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. Do they use taxpayers' money to go about doing those things?
Well, of course, yes. Well, I mean, they're passing laws.
Right.
Which is what they can do.
Well, sometimes I think I want my money back.
and they're trying to do the right thing.
I understand.
You know, but it just gets very, very
overwhelming.
Very complex.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. It was a lot. That's the biggest change I've seen, at least in criminal law, that I've seen over the 40 years I've been in law.
How have you been rewarded for your years of service? How do you think you have been rewarded as a judge?
Well, it's a job it has a lot of prestige.
Mm-hmm.
It's you can do a lot of good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pay is good. I'm not going to complain about that.
Okay.
Generally speaking, you can sort of control your docket mm-hmm. to an extent, and so that things can run efficiently.
Right.
Do you ever get to use your mind?
Right, right. Do you ever feel like you really helped someone to turn their life around?
Yeah, and a number of people have come up and told me that.
Thank you.
And they said they've had a lot of problems and came up and they thought I was pretty understanding and did them well.
Okay.
And they've turned it around. And it's a great thing to see.
Right.
And a lot of that's just growing up. You know, a lot of
people get in
trouble with the law and such. Some people just develop a little bit slower or socially.
That's true.
And legally than others. And they eventually get it straightened around, and sometimes we try our best to try and get things straightened around and
right.
keep the community safe at the same time.
That's true. That's true. And I know that drugs is a problem here in Marion, Ohio, as well as Ohio.
Everywhere.
Everywhere, all over the nation. And drugs have become their own economy. Why are sentences so stiff and strict on, I guess, those who sell drugs?
Well, what they're trying to do is cut down on the supply on the street as far as that goes. The legislature determines the range of penalties.
Mm-hmm.
People are upset, so they want action from the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislators are responding to that by setting the sentences where they are, depending on how it is. If they have a large amount of drugs, that's a large amount of damage they can do to society, and so they think that should be punished with a lot more prison time as far as that goes. Again, there's a range of penalties depending on whether it's simple possession to whether you're selling some but not a lot.
Right.
Or you're selling a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, or if you're one of the main kingpins or something.
Right.
The damage to society can be much, much greater if you have those higher amounts.
Right.
So the legislature draws the general penalty range for mm-hmm. the judges to decide from, and then the individual judges figure out where on that range that the legislature set for them where the person should go and what they should do.
Yeah, do you think that's some of the penalties have been fair or unfair?
Well, there's times I think that the penalties
does it matter the age?
Can be excessively
right,
harsh. There's
right.
sometimes it might be excessively easy as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But judge's job is not to do what he or she wants.
Uh-huh,
the judge's
understand
job
that.
Is to follow the law.
Follow the law.
And that's where you go. I guess one situation I could use, and this may not be something real big around here or something, mm-hmm. but illegal deer hunting.
Oh, okay.
And Ohio is a very diverse state.
Right.
You know, now you jacklight hunting deer in Southeast Ohio. That's a big deal.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. It's a major, major thing.
Wow.
You know, it's serious. You don't break those laws down Southeast Ohio.
Okay.
On the other hand, you know, you shoot a deer in Cuyahoga County, they'll probably give you the good citizenship medal, you know, because, you know, the deer
yeah.
run into
traffic
all the time.
Yeah.
You know, but, it can depend a lot on what the views are in the particular community.
Right. That's true. That's true. And it's too bad that drugs have really gotten all out of hand and has its own economy. And I think that's more or less now. I'm not for all that either, but it seems like it's not going anywhere, you know. And how are we going to fill all these prisons up? And I guess we're just going to build more prisons. And you know what really crossed my mind?
Mm-hmm.
The right to work. I don't know where I came up with this. This is my idea. Mm-hmm. For drug dealers, right? They go to court. They get sentenced to work. Why can't they work? Why can't they be made to work? I mean, there's other things that the law makes them do, right? Like go to jail. There's no way that you can make people work.
Well, there's options. Not everyone who gets convicted of that goes to prison as far as that goes. They mm-hmm. can be put on probation or what they call community control sanctions. And, you know, they're able to work, you know, as part of that. That's usually a requirement that you get a lawful job and support yourself, support your family, as far as that goes. As far as work in the prisons, they have a lot of training programs.
I mean out here. In our community, yeah.
Well, that community service, that is a community control sanction.
Do they get paid for that? Or
they don't get paid for it, but they can get, like, credit towards their fines or their court costs as far as that goes. But they aren't actually paid for it as far as that goes. But the community is getting the benefit of the work and the service.
But has no one ever thought of that? Does that sound like a silly idea?
Oh, no, people do it all the time.
Just instead of sentencing someone to jail, sentence them to work and, you know, make a living for themselves under certain, you know, standards or whatever.
Well, yeah.
Like house arrest.
Well, right. There are lots of options, and those options are being used today.
Are they?
But, well, to an extent, depending on the courts and the particular judge as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. So those things can be used as possible tools. But sometimes people just won't want to do anything. You know, say, go ahead and work. And say, no, I'm not going to.
But what if that's a sentence? You have to work.
Yeah, well, what if they don't?
Well, then they have the option, I guess,
of going to jail. There you go. And that's what happens.
Uh-huh.
So
you're saying you can't really make them go to work.
You can take a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, I got you on that.
There you are.
But I would like to think that some would rather go to work.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Make a check. You know, well, the judge made me go to work to learn. And some of them need that.
Yeah.
You know? Some of them need that.
I understand.
Under certain restrictions, you know, they could. I would like to think that, you know, there's more ways to deal with it than. I just think that was a big one.
Yeah.
To me, you know. Yeah. Because a lot of them may not want to work. Maybe selling drugs is a little easier, but it's work.
Well,
they take work. They take time. I mean, what about selling insurance? If they could sell drugs, just think what they could do with that.
Well,
turned around the
funny,
right way.
It's funny what you can say about that. I do remember one case, a young gentleman here in Marion, and he was getting in trouble and he was selling drugs, and his dad was sort of bad news and stuff, so mm-hmm. he didn't have much of a chance to get started, you know, but you know, he was in trouble and he ended up getting evicted and you know, came to sentencing time, and I said to him, I said, look, you know, from what I've seen of you over the years and stuff, you're an intelligent guy.
Right.
You know, you're not, you know, a lot of people, you know, they aren't the sharpest tools in the shed.
Right.
As far as criminals and stuff, but this guy's pretty sharp. You know, you could just tell he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, you know, if you turn your attention to doing something legal and stuff, you'd probably do okay.
Right.
You know, and the prosecutor was in the courtroom. He agreed.
Right.
And, you know, and that guy did. He sort of turned it around.
That's great.
And that's good to see.
It's good you saw that in him,
yeah.
though, you know.
Yeah, he turned his skills for legal, to do work in the legal business and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I think he's done all right.
That's good.
Yeah, it's a good thing to see.
That is a good thing. It's a good thing to hear.
Mm-hmm.
We just wish we had a little more of that going on.
Understand.
Just had a lot of that going on. Let me see. I think I had a... If you could change how law works today in cases that seem minor, now they're more complex, like you were talking, how would you change? And what would you change?
As far
laws
as
or legislature,
law?
Yeah.
Again,
legislature.
I would simplify it And I would give more more discretion to the judge as far as what to do, instead of saying, well, okay, he broke into a structure, but he broke into a structure, but three people were there or something, as opposed to five people were there. Or, I don't know. That's a bad example. But instead of just saying, trying to cover every particular instance, just say, you know, don't break into a structure, you know, and these are the this is the penalty range.
Right.
Six months to 3 years or whatever.
Right.
And just leave it at that, instead of saying, well, if it's this, well, then it's 1 year, you know. If it's this, it can be up to 18 months. Or if it's this, it's up to 2 years. You know, just simplify the thing. I would think would be the best thing to do. And it would make for a more understandable legal code, legal system.
Right, right. And probably wouldn't cost so much money either, you know, because the jails, they're overcrowded. I see that over on Ruth Avenue. Aren't they doing something over there?
Yeah,
off of Silver Street, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a little community detention type facility and such.
Okay. Will this be for adults?
Yes, for adults. Yes, okay. From what I understand. You got to remember, I'm retired now. I'm not tied in as close as I was. But
you still know what's going on, though.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, yeah. You still in the loop, right?
Not as much as I used to. But,
a little bit, though.
A little bit.
That's good. That's good. So I hear that you're a guest at the Black Heritage Banquet this weekend.
Absolutely. And I have the honor of introducing the guest speaker, who's Melody Stewart, who's a justice of the Ohio Supreme Court.
Oh, that's...
She's just elected a little over a year ago, so she just finished her first year as a Supreme Court justice. I'll be interested to hear what her thoughts and experience has been. That's a very high honor to be elected as a justice of the Ohio Supreme Court. I think there have only been 161 people in the history of Ohio who have been a justice. And we will get to hear from Justice Melody Stewart this this weekend. And I'm for one, I'm looking very much forward to hearing what she has to say.
That's great. I know you're probably honored to do that.
Oh,
she's kind of high up there, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Wow, that's great. Well, I hope to be a guest there, too, this weekend. Looking forward to it myself. And if there's anything about your career that you would do over, what would it be? Would you choose to do something else, or?
No, I've just been my entire life has been very blessed, and I've been very lucky, very fortunate to have done what I've done. And I'm sure I've made mistakes, I'm sure, and things.
Who hasn't, right?
Right, who hasn't? but I mean, overall, I've just been a very, very fortunate, lucky person, and I'm very grateful to that, and I just hope to do good.
Well, look like you chose the right profession.
Well, thank you.
And still being in the loop. A lot of people say, well, I wish I had done this instead of taking the road that I did take.
No.
But that's good. That is so great that you picked the right one to do. So, I think we're going to have snow tomorrow. It's dark. I think this has been one of the darkest, dimmest winters I've ever experienced.
Well, that's sort of the trade-off we get with our weather in winter. If it's going to be warmer than usual, and overall it has, it's cloudy.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, it is. It's simply because there's more moisture in the air.
Right.
And whereas when it's sunny and stuff, a lot of time that's because of the real cold air from Canada and Siberia coming down, and it's very cold, even though it's sunny out.
Right, right.
But, yeah, if it's above normal, it's going to be cloudy. But all things considered, I'd rather have wet than cold myself.
And the clouds, right?
Yep. I can take that.
And the fog. We had a lot of fog, too. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being my guest. I have enjoyed you so much. And I pray that those who were listening did enjoy what you had to share with us, your dreams, I mean your hobbies and mm-hmm. your passions through life, and how grateful you are for serving the community. And we've been privileged to have you as our judge. We thank you so much for your service.
Oh, you're welcome.
And glad that you're enjoying your retiring time, doing what you want to do. It's got to be a great life. Got to be a great life.
All right.
So, Judge, thank you once again.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I've enjoyed you. You have been listening to Linda Sims, the voice of a people, here at WWGH 107.1 FM radio. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And hope to have you listen in next Monday and Tuesday from 4:15 until 5 p.m. Until next time, be blessed.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. For legendary comedian and the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
And as I teased before we went to the break there, we have on today a lady who I've had on the program, I believe, two times before. But every time she comes on, I am excited. She's one of the most